Morning. We'll open the House Committee on Transportation Friday, May the 7th. We'll try to follow down the agenda for the benefit of the members. At the request of the sponsor, Senate Bill 652A has been withdrawn so they can work on it some more. If they work on it too long, it's dead, so we'll see what they want to do. First bill up is Senate Bill 108A. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 108A. Is there any further testimony we have, Janet, or any information we need to close on the work stuff? What do we need to do?
Mr. Chair, I believe both of the witness list from the previous two meetings was completed. There's no one additional signed up. We do have at your place this morning two amendments that were discussed at the meeting on Wednesday. Senate Bill 108-86, and that does three things. It makes the director appointment by the governor instead of from the new state aviation board. That's the first section. On lines 4 and 5, it eliminates the requirement that the director of the new department have a pilot's license, but maintains the requirement that the new director have experience in airport operations or management. And then, Mr. Chair, members, lines 6 through 11 allow the appointment of the new aviation board to be before the operative date of the act, and that was something that was not really discussed by Representative Hill, especially it created a problem when the new director was going to be appointed by the board. But in talking with counsel, it made sense to do even if the new director is appointed by the governor. So that's what the 86 amendments have, Mr. Chair.
Well, since we have no one to testify, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108, and we will go into work session on Senate Bill 108A. We have before us the Dash 6 and Dash 7 amendments. Are there other amendments? What happened to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Mr. Chair, there is a Dash A2 amendment from Lone Star Northwest and Tom Mann that Tom Mann explained at the last meeting. And the 108-7 amendment is Representative Freeman, which is relating to land use decisions.
Okay. Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, move the Dash 2 amendments.
Representative Hill moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 108. Any discussion? Any discussion? Will the clerk call roll?
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Cruz. Aye. Representative Lehman.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative
Welch.
Yes. Representative Montgomery. Aye. We now have the Dash 2 amendments incorporated into Senate Bill 108.
Representative Taylor. Chair, move the Dash 6 amendments.
Representative Taylor moves the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 108. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, clerk call roll.
Representative Hill. Aye. Representative Cruz. Aye. Representative Lehman. Aye. Representative Wilson. Aye. Representative Taylor. Aye. Representative Walker. Aye. Representative Well. Yes. Representative Devlin. Aye. Representative Montgomery. Aye. Dash 6 amendments are adopted. Representative Hill. Move the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 108.
Representative Hill moves the Dash 7 amendment to Senate Bill 108. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, call the roll.
Okay.
Representative Taylor. Aye. Representative Cruz. Aye. Representative Cruz. Aye. Representative Cruz. Aye. Representative Lehman. Aye. Representative Wilson. Aye. Representative Walker. Aye. Representative Welch. Yes. Representative Montgomery. Aye. We now have the Dash 7 amendments. For the benefit of the committee, we have the Dash 2, 6, and 7 amendments in the House Senate Bill 108.
Just one clarification. What was the answer to the question about operative dates? Is that taken care of by the 6s or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hill, the operative date is still, for the entire bill, is July 1st, 2000, but the
by the governor.
Agreement of the governor of the board and the rest here can be on the operative date of the bill, which is 90 days after the session.
Mr. Hill. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 108 as amended to the floor to be passed by the Little Ways and Means. Have a Senate this bill.
Are all the most again, please?
I'm just, does this need to go to Ways and Means of the fiscal?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the Speaker did not put a referral to Ways and Means on the, he does not have a prior referral. It did not go to Ways and Means on the Senate side. It,
submitted
the referral, and it does have a fiscal statement.
So is it over 50,000?
No, the savings of $108,000.
There's a savings.
Should be in your.
Does it need to? I guess my question is, does it need to go to the Ways and Means?
At this point, so I have no indication in each of the Ways and Means for the benefit of the committee and the audience and everybody listening and whatever. They can't agree over on the Senate side on this bill. The chair of the Senate Transportation Committee in the motion said it shall go to Ways and Means was part of the motion from the Senate chair. And then it was accepted by the chair of the co-chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee. Has since received a note, just a second, received a note from the chair of the Senate committee that she doesn't want it to go to Ways and Means, and said that it's okay if it doesn't go to Ways and Means. Anything under $50,000 or savings, we don't have to send to Ways and Means. I want this totally on the record, because they can't get along 1 minute over there on this kind of stuff. And I don't want to get in the middle of their fight. And I don't want this committee to get in the middle of their fight. We're not stooping to that level, Representative Hill.
I guess I'm confused. I just know in terms of what I've been told in my committee, $50,000, never been told positive or negative, because it has to balance out on the book. So I just want to do what I couldn't care less what the Senate wants us to do, or not.
Well, you bet they care, because they got to approve what we do on all the things. Go ahead.
So, I move Senate Bill 108, many other ways and means, with a two-pass recommendation.
At this point, we have a motion to move Senate Bill 108 as amended to Ways and Means with a due-pass recommendation. I will repeat, there is no fiscal on this, fiscal savings. I want that for the record. I also want for the record that the Senate Chair of House of Senate Transportation said that she doesn't feel it needs to go down there now. That's all on the record, on the tape, and Senate Representative Devlin, and then Mr. Walker.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to concur with you and indicate that clearly this doesn't have a fiscal in the sense of costing more. I don't see any justification for sending it to Ways and Means, but it's going to delay the process. But I'm going to vote against the motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Likewise, I don't think this bill needs to go to Ways and Means. Things get lost in Ways and Means. This bill's a good bill. It needs to pass out today. I'm going to vote on that motion.
Procedural question, Mr. Chair. If we were to defeat Representative Hill's motion to go to Ways and Means, then we can remake a motion to go to the floor with a due pass?
You can do just about anything you want to, and yes, sir. And that procedurally, legally, the answer to that question.
Look, yes. That closes the committee, by the way.
There are some exceptions. Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, it's not my intention to kill Senate Bill 108. If nobody wants to get to make sure this is balanced out and I'm going to pursue it, I'm very happy to withdraw the motion and move to send Senate Bill 108 to the floor. But I remind my colleagues of the other persuasion that when it comes time for beating up on bills that don't go down the way of the means when they have fiscal, and there's a fiscal the other direction, which still needs to be balanced out down the book. So I at least try to be consistent in my offering. So I will withdraw the motion and make a new motion to send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So the other seven of us understand what you just said. Representative Hill withdraws his motion to move it to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. I, as the chair, feel disappointed that if they're going to be independent they're not totally independent, and they should be responsible for collecting the money and the fuel there, too. I'll feel that forever. I'm not insisting that be in the bill, but you aren't independent unless you're independent. Period. But that doesn't seem to have the persuasion of the committee. Representative Hill.
Chair, is it the floor with the due path recommendation?
Representative Hill moves it to the floor with the due path recommendation. That's Senate Bill 108 as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Crump.
Aye.
Representative Linder.
No.
Representative Wilson.
Aye. Excuse me, aye.
Representative Miller.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
No.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye, with his reservation. Maybe I'll vote no on the floor. Senate Bill 108 goes to floor to do pass. Representative Cup, you're the pilot, and I understand Walker also is a pilot. Would you mind joint carrying this thing?
Well, actually, it's my daughter who's a pilot, but I would love to.
I would be honored. And, Mr. Chair, in the spirit of that bipartisanship, I want to thank my good friend and representative from Eugene for giving me this great little card, which is a picture of a little boy on an airplane tricycle, I guess, which is exactly what I had when I was a kid. And I want to read you this note. It is the sweetest thing in the world. This reminded me of you. I'm sure you loved planes since you were a boy. All that's missing in this photo is the family dog running free in the back of a big truck.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that if there's any way this dog's going to die, how would these two people carry it on the
plane? Well, that's your chance. That's not getting even with everybody. That's my note. So thank you all very much, and thanks for putting up with us. We will have some guests showing up in about an hour. Thank God they're not here right now. We have about 10 Russians coming in. The good news is they can't speak English, so they might not understand. Senate Bill 108 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Next item on our agenda, this place, is Senate Bill 358. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 358. Janet, pardon me, I'm sitting here in the ditch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 358 makes the number 7 or 8 unrelated. Mr. Chair, Kelly Taylor, who knows most about this bill, had to leave for a few minutes and wondered if we could pass this bill in.
We sure could. We'll close the bill 358 and pass it out of committee. Is Kelly Taylor around for
that? She'll be back.
Any other bill that she isn't? I understand that. So, but any other bill that she is involved in? How about 523? Okay, we can do 5. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 523. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 523 would allow, under specified circumstances, non-retail customers to dispense fuel during an emergency. The person that's dispensing the fuel would have to be pre-trained and by the under the safety requirements of the state fire marshal. This is an issue. Was an issue during recent flooding in Lincoln County, and Rob Bovette from Lincoln County is here to discuss the bill. There are representatives from the fire marshal's office here if you have any questions about their involvement and feelings about the bill.
Well, thank you. Rob Bovette, are you? Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you. Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Rob Bovette. I'm Assistant County Counsel for Lincoln County. Senate Bill 523 is the result of some emergency events that occurred in Lincoln County. In Lincoln County, the county has the only fuel facility with an emergency generator, which means that during an emergency event, as we've been experiencing over the past few winters, we're the only game in town for fueling everything that needs to be out on the road for emergency. That could be, you know, everything from police cars, ambulances, to school buses, to ODOT vehicles, laundry list of folks that need to be out there responding to the emergency. That's all fine and dandy, and we went ahead and fueled those vehicles because their own fuel facilities were obviously inoperative due to the emergency circumstances and having no electricity to pump fuel, which was all well and good until we got our audit from the state fire marshal. and they reminded us that in order to have a customer at a non-retail fuel facility, yeah, they had to fit into one of these boxes, or many boxes, and we could meet all of them except for one. One of the requirements is that your customers be basically regular customers that fit into one of certain categories, one of which is that basically they annually use 2,400 gallons of fuel, at least for certain non-governmental, such as ambulances and ODOT. Actually, ODOT's government, but they don't fit in that box. So they raised that issue with us, said technically you're out of compliance with the statute because you can only be dispensing to your regular customers. So what this bill does, they didn't enforce it upon us, they didn't cite us, they didn't give us any civil penalties or anything like that. But what this bill does is it tries to conform the law to reality. It enacts a new statute that basically accepts out emergency events from the regular customer requirement. So we can then go ahead and fuel ambulances and school buses and ODOT trucks during these emergency events at our fuel facility. I chatted with staff at the State Fire Marshal's office when this first got printed, and we talked about it. As far as I know, they're comfortable with it, but I don't know, you may hear something different today. It didn't appear on the Senate side. I believe it passed handily in the Senate. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Our resident fire chief doesn't have any questions. Is that your deal?
Oh, I will. Okay. I do have some written testimony.
Mr. Chair, I am gravely concerned. This is a terrible slippery slope. You know, I hope that we get the State Fire Marshal up here to talk to us about the safety concerns necessary for pumping fuel because of the grave concerns, you know, and I think that if we hold out long enough, the other 49 states in the United States will, you know, roll back and get rid of self-serve because of the safety concerns and the fact that people don't know how to pump gas. I mean, this is just absolutely ludicrous. You know, I guess we'll just keep accepting and accepting and accepting, and I guess I'd say if you violated the law, the State Fire Marshal should have cited you, and I'd like to know why he didn't.
Now, please, do not feel offended. I've been putting up and I'm absolutely opposed to self-service gas.
Oh, it's a big fault, Mr. Chair.
I noticed that Senator Miller is on that committee, and I believe he may have had a hand in the issues discussed.
There's another conspiracy going on.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I, too, am a little nervous that Senator Miller's name is on here as the carrier of the bill. I've been assured by my wife and my mother that I face serious lifetime retribution if I were to ever vote for self-service gas. But as a farmer who dispenses his own fuel on the farm and also use a card lock during emergency, I don't think this is an unreasonable request in my view.
Are there any questions of the witness? He's just sitting there listening.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, Representative Devlin, you have a legitimate question, sir.
Mr. Chairman, since this is degenerating so much, and Mr. Krupp has already indicated, Representative Krupp indicating the suspension of gas at home, I assume Representative Hill will introduce a bill next session to prohibit that.
I'm sure he's a fireman. He's been trained.
Thank you, Rob. You come all the way down here to listen to this. I'm a fireman.
Down here.
Can wait while you can, sir.
I'm losing control.
Friday.
Your fault. With all seriousness, the fire marshal's here. Do you have any comments you'd like to make? You're walking in plenty of ground this morning. Thank you.
Chair Montgomery, Teddy. I'm Brian Griffin with the State Fire Marshal's Office. I'm the Cheyenne Program Manager, and the card lock program comes under my purview. We have no problems with Senate Bill 523, and sort of address the one concern issued. We don't cite or penalize any companies until we have provided them education and training, and that does not work.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krupp, and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian, what's the significance of the airplane Titan here?
Just curious. Chair, Representative Krupp. I retired from the military. I flew F-4s, and I'm very proud of that.
So you are a soulmate to Representative Harper, then, I take it, who is also an F4 jockey.
Chair Representative.
I flew with Chair Harper.
Representative Harper.
Well, we can't vote for the
Democrat.
I think we need to go out and start over again. I know if I can say anything or not, but I simply wanted to say anything that Brian Griffith says, I will go with, because he was a wonderful committee administrator last year, and so I thought I would like to welcome him.
Chair Representative Logan, thank you.
Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
And Janet Atkins maybe has a legitimate question.
I don't have a legitimate question. I just wanted to point out that Rob Bovet is not a newcomer to the legislature either. He worked as a deputy in council and did some of the drafting for Joan Robinson in the 1993-5 session. Oh, no. Oh. My, how they grow up, Janet.
Thank you. Thank you for coming down. Thanks for being appreciated. Seriously. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 523. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 523.
Chairman, have we moved Senate Bill 523 to the floor of the due pass recommendation?
Representative Lehman moves Senate Bill 523 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Will the clerk call roll?
Representative Evelyn.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Courtesy, yes. Courtesy, yes, also.
Representative
Logan.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye.
Yes. Let the record show the chair did not ask for any courtesy votes on this, so I don't owe him anything. Yes. Bill 523 is passed to the floor to do pass recommendation. Representative Devlin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll carry the bill to avoid Representative Hill carrying the bill.
There's not much chance of that anyhow. Representative Devlin will carry Bill 523. Thank you very much for volunteering. I see Kelly's back in the audience with us now. Bill, public hearing on Senate Bill 358.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 358 makes a number of fairly unrelated changes to the motor vehicle code, and instead of me going through them and mentally going through them, I think she'd do a better job than I could. I won't have any.
Thank you. Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation. Thank you for waiting one bill to let you get back in the room. I appreciate that. This is another one of the bills from the Department of Transportation's DMV employees, and it is a conglomeration of trying to do some cleanup and some uniformity of some various statutes that things that kind of align it with reality, things that haven't been in place for many, many years, and so we just kind of went through and scraped together a bunch of the cleanup stuff, and it's in this bill. I'll walk you through them. On the federal rules with commercial vehicles and who has to have a commercial license, we talked about this with another bill earlier about motorhomes and recreational trailers and things. The federal rules exempt for personal use any of the RV type vehicles, be it trailer or motorhome or whatever. And Oregon's law talks about motorhomes, but really the federal rules exempt all recreational vehicles. And so this bill is trying to align it with the federal rules so that when people come out of state and everywhere else, it matches and applies, you know, uniform as far as what the exemption is.
Pardon me, Kelly. Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, thank you. Is that mostly for commercial driver licensing requirements or for the vehicle requirements?
Mr. Chair and Janet, it is for the need of whether or not you have to have a commercial driver's license. And so for personal use, if it's solely personal use, you would not need a commercial motor vehicle or a commercial driver's license. The second thing it does is it repeals a process that's not been in practice for just eons. The way the law reads, the court can suspend a vehicle registration under certain circumstances and tell the driver when they're in front of them, I'm suspending your vehicle registration, and then the court tells DMV, okay, finish out the paperwork. And DMV sends a letter to the customer and says, you're supposed to surrender your plate for a certain period of time. And then if the person doesn't, the law says we're supposed to send a peace officer out. That shows how long ago this thing was written, to go confiscate the plate, and then we're supposed to hold on to the plate and hand them back to the customer one day. Well, confiscating, retaining, and returning plates is pretty time-consuming and not very cost-effective. And what's really been happening in reality is if somebody does turn in their plates, then we just destroying them and then issuing them free plates and stickers when their time is up. It's just a lot smoother. And so this is one of those let's line it up with reality type changes. The next one is just there are three different statutes that talk about what offenses could be failed to appear, failed to apply, those sorts of things. Two out of the three exempt bicycle, pedestrian, and parking offenses, and this is lining them up. The third one just mentions pedestrian and bicycle, so it's just lining those three statutes up that all relate to each other with the exact same wording, just adding the word pedestrian in there. There's a statute that says that a trip permit for manufactured structures has to be a certain size, and it's a big size, and it makes the form complicated, and we just want to get the size out of the statute. It says that the department will determine what the form's content or size will be. There are some statutes that talk about that the tax collector is going to attest that all taxes have been paid on manufactured structures, and it's really the tax, or says it's the tax assessor that would do it, it's really the tax collector, which could be the same person in some counties, but to be consistent, it's the tax collector that knows whether or not I've paid my taxes, not necessarily the assessor. Two more, I'm almost done. Vehicle transporters use transporter plates to move manufactured structures around the state, and they're supposed to get a trip from it if they're moving it within state. They can use their plates if they're moving it from the manufacturer to a dealer. We'd like to be able to allow them to use their plates to move it from the manufacturer out of state. The purpose of the trip permit is when you're moving it within state to tell the counties that it's moving. Well, if you're going straight from the manufacturer to Idaho, there isn't a county in Oregon that cares. So why get a trip permit, make you go through a process to tell people that don't care that you're moving it out of state because it was never assigned to anybody's county in state. And the last one is there's language allowing us to adopt rules relating to vehicle transporters, and they're scattered all over a particular chapter, and it's really hard to find all the rule authorities, so we scraped it all together so it's in one place so that people can find it all. So none of these are that exciting, but we felt they were necessary to try to clean it up and make it a little easier to find stuff in the motor vehicle code, which if any of you have ever looked at, it can be hard. So we think this will better serve the public. We can find things easier, create some uniforms among the statutes, clarify the intent. I would ask the committee to support the bill.
I'm saying, the part about the convictions for parking offenses, is that different than Representative Kavansky's bill that talked about, you know, something like, I know that bill was into ways of use. Is it different than that bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is. This bill would modify all of it, and so this is a different piece than what he's trying to do.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, these are statutes, Representative Lena, that talk about you being suspended for failure to appear, failure to apply. His bill's not suspending you.
Thank you, Kelly. I must have explained it well.
Thank you very much.
We don't have a sign-up sheet.
I would say that there was no testimony on the other side other than mine, and it passed overwhelmingly over there.
Okay, fine. That's the case, and we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 358. Any local work session of Senate Bill 358, Representative Hill.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 358 and goes to the floor to do that recommendation.
Representative Hill, move Senate Bill 358A to the floor. Pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Will the clerk call the roll since we have to have some members?
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Krupp. Representative Krupp. Representative Lincoln.
Aye.
Representative Wilkins.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yep.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye. Senate Bill 358 is passed to the floor to do pass recommendation.
I'd really love the Sherry Christmas tree type deal.
Thank you.
I'm the only chance.
Your point of order. Yes. Just as long as Representative Taylor doesn't dress up like a Christmas tree.
You're sitting back in the same corner with her. Thank you very much. Representative Taylor will carry the bill. So next, we have two bills left for the benefit of the members that weren't here earlier. Senate Bill 652 has been withdrawn temporarily by the sponsor, not by us. The next bill up is Senate Bill 877. And
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 877 was sponsored by
Senator Tarno. So was the next bill, 878. Senator Tarno was out of town today, but didn't think there would necessarily be a problem with the bill without him here. Senate Bill 877 is a clarification and adds Class 2 ATVs to a number of two statutes that deal with where off-road vehicles may operate. Class 2 ATVs are dune buggies and jeeps, and it's a clarifying statute, and these vehicles are not operating on these areas now, but were not included in the statute when it was drafted.
Okay, we have a sign up sheet. We have a Mr. Green Street in the audience, I believe, sir. Would you come forward? Thanks for being with us this morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Greenstreet. My wife and I have been involved in all terrain vehicle use for the last 30 years, raising kids, grandkids, and so forth. Today on these bills, a couple bills here that have to do with all terrain vehicles, and just for the members' information, Class 1 all terrain vehicles are the real small little four wheelers. Class 2 are the full-size four-wheelers, as Janet explained, dune buggies and jeeps. Class 3 ATVs are the motorcycles that are designed and used off-highway. Pretty simple bill. When this was first done, it prohibits the use of snowmobiles, Class 1 and Class 3 ATVs, up and down highways, state highways, or railroads, or the right-of-ways of either one, and even prohibits the crossing of those under the statute 821.190. 821.200, which is Section 2, lists the exemptions from that rule. Basically, Section 1 of number 200 lists eight situations where the person is allowed to cross the highway or railroad track. Section 2 list five ways where the person can offer, or the vehicle can be operated up and down a state highway. And Section 3 lists three exceptions that allow a vehicle to be operated upon a railroad track or the right of way. All this bill does is add the Class 2 ATVs to this prohibit use. It was inadvertently left off originally, and it just is correcting that error. Thank you, Mr. Greenstreet. Are there any questions? Representative Wells?
Thank you. I see this bill, of course, came from Lane County, but are you involved in this trail that's going to be built up to Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, for all-terrain vehicles? Does this bill have anything to do with that issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, the backcountry discovery route that you were referring to, I do have quite a bit of involvement with it. This bill, yes, would have some bearing on that, because that route does cross state highways, federal highways, and without them being on there, they're prohibited, but there are exceptions that allow that backcountry discovery route to go through.
Sure. Just as a point of information, I feel like I saw another bill dealing with that issue, but evidently this isn't the one. What's the status of that, and what's happening on that? Can you tell us a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Well, the backcountry discovery route, a bill that addresses more of the problems that has run into, which is a route sponsored by Oregon Parks and Rec Department, is more Senate Bill 878, which is the next bill on the agenda.
You're right. We'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Just a quick simple question. That is Section 2. Since I don't know what the other part of the statute says, because we're referring to classes of all-terrain vehicles, and then we delete the class numbers, and then we just refer to all-terrain vehicles. I don't know if that is consistent, which would bring in all three classes. I don't know if there's a fourth class.
No.
There's only three.
So, three. So all-terrain vehicle would cover all three classes, and they always mention snowmobile separate because it's not one of the three classes.
Okay. I was actually just concerned that you don't not call it out in any other problem
right.
because they had previously just, you know, called it all three.
Right.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Greenstreet, for being here. Appreciate it. There's no other testimony. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 877. Out of courtesy to Senator Tarno, if there's no opposition to this bill, we'll go into work session. If there's some problems with it, we'll let him come forward. We will go into work session on Senate Bill 877. Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 877 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 877 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Hearing none, 877 is passed to the floor with a due pass. We have a couple members who signed on to the bill, and I guess Representative Tuck has a bill, or Representative Lehman, would you like to carry this one? Representative Lehman will carry this bill. Thank you. Next one is Senate Bill 878. We'll open the public hearing on 878.
Chair, Senate Bill 878 does several things. In Section 2, it creates an offense of operating an all-terrain vehicle in violation of posted restrictions. And right now, if a person is in an area where they're not supposed to be, the statute would require that the offense be a criminal trespass, and that would still be an option for a land manager, but making the violation of capacity traffic infraction would give them another route to go, which would be easier to enforce and less penalty for the person that's operating out of the areas that they are designated. And then Section 3 of the bill makes a number of changes. Excuse me, Section 3 and 4 of the bill. Instead of designating a number of areas where all-terrain vehicles without street legal equipment may operate, make those changes so that they may operate in areas that are posted as not posted as closed off-road vehicles. There's a change in line 26 for roads that are other than hard surface. Change that term to three-lane gravel roads because there's some confusion and not standard definition of what hard surface means. Mr. Greenstreet is also here to explain the background of this bill. I wanted to let the committee members know that I did check with a number of land managers, state parks, Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, so they're aware of the bill, and the Department of Transportation is also, and they are aware of the bill and did not have concerns as the way the bill is written. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning again, Mr. Greenstreet. Thank you for being here.
For the record, again, my name is Bob Greenstreet. On Senate Bill 878, it gets the first part of it, Section 1 and Section 2. As regards to going on the wrong side of a sign that has the symbol of a motorcycle or an ATV with a slash across it, under current law, that the county law enforcement officer has to charge you with criminal trespass. If found guilty, you are a convicted felon, which is a pretty harsh penalty for that type of. And the Lane County Sheriff's Office has come forward to make it a traffic infraction. The fine still would be $300, which is a good stiff fine. And we, as a user, support this bill. Because, you know, the person should not be in an area that's closed, and they should be fine, but as it was explained to me by the Lane County Sheriff Department, to be a convicted felon is a pretty harsh penalty. So the fine would kind of fit the crime a little bit better if this bill passes. The other part of this has to do with the backcountry discovery route. The state of Oregon, as most of you know, is 50% managed by other than Oregonians, by the federal government. And looking at this route is tying together low-level crooked, slow travel backcountry roads and tying them together so you can cross the state of Oregon in 5 days instead of 5 hours. And they visit a lot of the off the main highway type points of interest that a lot of folks would love to see if they could go out there without getting lost in the process. In order to do this, some of the words in the laws need to be better clarified, and we've had some problems in trying to work with Parks and Rec with the law enforcement officers for the Forest Service. In Section 3, starting on line 15, the only thing in that law basically describes the equipment that the ATVs are exempt from having because they're not street legally equipped vehicles. Windshield wipers, turn signals, rearview mirrors, horns, those type of things. The only thing we're doing in there is changing the word designated to describe. Under Section 4, starting on page 2, line 12, 821020 is a statute that when this was passed back in the middle 80s, and I don't know if Representative Layman was involved at that time or not, but the only area in the state of Oregon that was open to ATVs was the coast, Oregon Dunes National Recreation Area. And this statute, Part 1, described ODNRA, Calvacoose Bay, Florence, and up at Sand Lake. Since that time, for example, my wife and I have attended over 400 meetings with Forest Service BLM promoting our sport. We now have areas that are open to our use, going to 3 in Rogue River National Forest, Lakeview BLM, Pineville BLM, Burns BLM, throughout the whole realm of the National Forest and BLM lands, including Tillamook State Forest. And in order to describe each one of those areas, we'd probably end up with a pretty hefty bill for the surveying of all of these in description. So the recommendation was to change it to include the places in the state of Oregon that are open to us rather than describe each and every spot. The backcountry discovery route using these level 2 roads, for example, is 750 miles from Lakeview to Walla Walla, and we'd have to describe each and every road if we used the old method. There was some concern that we were trying to, you know, the Doomsday Sayers was accusing us of trying to open areas that are now closed. This is not the purpose of this, and it so states in there that the wilderness areas remain closed, wildlife sanctuaries, wetlands, all this is still closed. The road definitions in the old law referred to hard surface roads, which in our interpretation when we worked on this was gravel roads. It is even states in line 27 about paved parking lots whether hard surfaced or not. But the law enforcement folks and some of the land managers for the Forest Service took that to mean any road that had any rocks. So any rock whatsoever on a road made it a passenger car only highway equipped vehicle route, which was not the intent. So the two-lane gravel road separates these little single-track narrow roads, low-speed roads, from the higher-speed two-lane gravel roads, which should be close to us. In Section 5, we revisit 821-200, which we had in the previous. 821-190 banned use for paved highways and railroads. 821-200 gave exemptions to that law, which if the fact that we're banned is because they're not street legal, then the exception would be for vehicles not equipped for street legal travel. The Forest Service, however, cannot recognize that, so we're suggesting that we add language in there that the vehicles they're talking about that have the exemption to cross these highways, snowmobiles, for example, do not have to be street legally equipped vehicles. And basically, again, the reason for a lot of this, as Representative Wells mentioned, is the Parks and Rec sponsored backcountry discovery route, which would be open not only to the Class 1 and 2, 3 ATVs, they would also be open to sport utility vehicles. And I think as we checked, you know, they're the number one selling vehicle, I believe, in a lot of the states. And in the state of Oregon, as in other places, there's an awful lot of baby boomers that are in that late 40s, early 50s that haven't really stiffened up like some of us have. And I think as they get stiffer, as they get 10 more years on, that they're going to enjoy motorized recreation probably much more to a greater degree than they do today.
Representative Taylor, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. I had a call from a person who said they supported the bill because it clarified the language for ATVs and motorcycles. So is that the case?
That is the case. It's actually all three classes of ATVs.
What about my scooter?
Your
scooter.
Moped?
No, it's a Honda scooter.
Oh, that was
125.
Okay.
Two-wheeler.
if you were riding that in these areas that are open, you would need a Class 3 ATV sticker. And this sticker, as we refer to it, an off-road operating permit.
Mm.
And so if you were going to ride that in the sand dunes at the coast...
Yeah, you can do that very well.
It doesn't work well. It's
for gravel either.
Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did we have a pistol on this?
No.
The reason I ask that, Mr. Chair, is because the way this is written in Section 4, anywhere in Oregon, you could ride an ATV, and unless it's posted that you can't. And so that means every park, anywhere that is a state forest, anywhere, and that the only way that you could be excluded is if it is posted that you couldn't go there, because the way that the exemption of where you can go is any lands that are open to the public. And so what we've done, we're changing from a restricted area in terms of where you can only ride in specific regions and areas of the state, to now you can ride anywhere, and now if you want to say that it's closed, and you can't ride it there, then you have to post signage. And so there's a tremendous amount of signage there in terms of if there's sensitive wilderness areas and it's open to the public, you could take your ATV and ride there according to this bill if there's not a sign that it's not posted as opposed to off-road use.
Right. There is a fiscal, and it does not discuss that requirement. Most of the areas, I think Mr. Greenstreet answered this better, but most of the areas are already posted, and for instance, the beach areas and that kind of thing. But we did check with state parks about that issue.
Mr. I appreciate that, but that's because those were areas that were specifically called out in the statute, but this is now all of Eastern Oregon. It is anywhere, lands that are open to the public, which is a different set of rules. It used to be lands that are open to the public within these specified areas, and now if the entire state is a free range for ATV, unless it is posted that you can't go there, and so you have to sort of flip the other way, and where it was once closed, you could not take an ATV, may now go there because it doesn't have a sign. There wouldn't be a sign posted there because you couldn't go there previously. And I guess it may be a sign there, but you were prohibited by law previously by doing it. So I will not be able to support this the way this is, because this is a complete reversal of how we're dealing with where you can take an ATV.
That's not the intent, Mr. Greenstreet, is it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill. No, absolutely not. Most of the areas of your state parks, your sensitive areas and so forth, they do have closure signs already on them. The reason that this was added, not posted as closed to off-road use, was to alleviate the fears of the environmental groups that we weren't trying to open. All of the wilderness areas are closed to us. There are no roads in the wilderness area anyhow, otherwise it shouldn't be wilderness. All the wildlife areas and so forth. Every place that is closed now, and there's nothing in this that would prohibit putting up additional post signs. The old language talked about paved parking lots. that are open to the public. Well, basically, that had all of the Kmart, Walmart parking lots in the state open at that time. We have added language in there that are that these parking lots have to be adjacent to or on a designated off-road vehicle area, trails, or routes. Because of over the coast, I know the camping areas are paved parking lots. But we're not trying to open anything with this. But not posted as closed was added in to alleviate the fears of the environmental groups.
I think the question that President Hill is asking is, are there areas of the state right now where land managers would probably not want ATV operators at, but they've not posted them because they haven't had to worry about it because of the limitations in the past? If you pull the limitations off, are they now going to have to go out and put signs up because people are free to go there?
As I understand, Representative Layman, the management plans for the forest in the state of Oregon, I think there's 13 national forests, those management plans are all open unless supposed to be closed. So all of the forest land today is open to cross-country ATV rides. There's another little kicker in there that says if you cause any damage to the ground doing this, you can pay triple damage. Does that answer the...
Not under present law. Because you can only be in Coos, Douglas, Lane, and Tillamook County between the U.S. Highway 101 and the mean low tide of the Pacific Ocean, between Coos Bay and the Tunsla River, and within boundaries around the Sand Beach Activity Zone in the Tillamook County Sand Beach Park Area.
Mr. Chair, Representative, part of the reason for updating this is at the time that that was written, that was the only area in the state that was open to us. We've got three we've got around 30-some areas.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate what he's saying, but the way this is written, the entire state is now open unless it is posted closed. And where it was a very limited area where there was a requirement to post, so it's not, if there's a, I don't know if there's a state park, I have done on my Eastern Oregon geography, and I use Eastern Oregon that includes the different time, if there's a state forest, you cannot go there today with these vehicles because they are prohibited because it's not within these designated areas. And so, and then with what you're changing is yes, you will be able to go there unless there's a sign that says you can, it's been posted as closed.
For discussion, you bring up some very good points. And I think we have no further discussion. I think at this point we need to have Senator Carnell come forward too and continue on this bill. Janet, do you have any thoughts? Because it is, unless you can come up with a couple of one-liners that we could put in here to take care of your concerns, it is a serious issue we have to address.
I know I'm happy with trying to solve the problem, but I think this is way too broad.
Mr. Chair, and we can also get more people here. I had exactly the same concerns that Representative Hill did, and I discussed them with the Green Streets, and I did call the manager, the Forest Service, and Mr. Green Street did answer that today, that most of management plans do say they're open unless closed, because the Forest Service was the only one that said she was still getting back to me with that question. But
the Forest Service is federal, so...
So the main area that he is talking about would be BLM and the Forest Service, so the cost would be to the federal government, not the state government, but that's not the
case. This law wouldn't apply there anyway.
We can't cancel.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Devlin, then come on.
Just a question for Ms. Ashton, maybe for the witness. I'm on 10 and 11. If after the comma, the last portion was struck, would the effective impact be that a person would be, the land should be restricted. If they were restricted, it would be up to the person to know whether or not they were restricted. If you took away the requirement that they be posted, so I mean, someone could still be cited if they were on land that through some management plan had been restricted. Is there a problem with that?
If for a matter of discussion, I guess that's fine. And Mr. Greenstreet, you have some
Mr. Representative, The Forest Service is all now, the National Forests, have a secondary document out behind their forest management plan that's called Access Travel Management. And those access travel management have further defined within this open and less posted closed specific areas that are closed to our use. And those areas that are closed would be, for whatever reason, maybe it's for non-motorized use only, such as Tillamook State Forest. Again, when you enter those areas, there's already the little vehicle with a slash across it on those routes that we have been, that we're aware of. As far as deleting that, like I say, the only reason that was put in was to appease the environmental groups that thought we were opening up wilderness areas. One possibility, on line 25, page 2, lands that are open to the public possibly could have very few words in there that something about the lands that are now or may future be designated as open to all three classes of agents.
Okay, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm getting confused by some of the comments, because as I am reading this, it says that subsection 1 of section 4 says the section establishes the areas where the exemption from equipment requirements for off-road vehicles described under ORF 821.010 is applicable.
That's right.
So I don't think it has any. Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with where you can ride an ATV. It's just saying that these are areas where you are exempt from any equipment requirements that might be on off-road vehicles. Representative Lehman, you're a lawyer. Am I correct here? Am I way off there?
Well, you're a lawyer.
I will bail him out.
The reason, right? You know, we have no intention of killing this bill, Mr. Greenstreet. I think you see this from serious concerns. I think we need some legal counsel to get it worded properly. Secondarily, I feel obligated to ask the senator to come, and he's out of town, to join us. I can assure you the committee wants to be very supportive of us, but at this point, I think we better get these questions answered. And if there's any other questions, we can get them to Janet. And if you have some thoughts that can help us take care of the representative's concern, I would sure appreciate it. But thank you for your very professional testimony, by the way. You've done this before, I can tell.
Not really.
Thank you very much. You've done a good job pretending like you did, man.
Well, I was Deschutes County employee at one time also. So I've made some.
If there is no further discussion, we will not close. We will close the public hearing temporarily on Senate Bill 878. We'll bring it up again next week with Senator Carno and try to address these questions. If we have a constitutional problem, we'll discuss that too. Is there any further discussion from the committee? I'm hearing none. We imagine the Senate's doing the same thing we are, pumping out bills like crazy. We only have a few left in our committee. I have more showing up, Janet.
Yes, yes, Mr. Chairman, the Senate committee is doing overtime. They met last night even, so there will be quite a few Senate bills still coming.
Unless we get direction from the leadership, we've heard our last House bill in the committee. We're done with House
bills. Studded tire bills, Ben?
Most studded tire bills. Studded tire bills, yes.
Mr. Chair, but...